Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
670 The Score is the official radio home of Cubs baseball. Listen to all 60 games of the 2020 season here.
It's got a chance! Cubs win!
Live from the Hyundai Studios, this is 670 The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. A radio.com sports station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
Steve Stone, White Sox TV analyst.
We've got NASA on one screen. I've got an iPad and four different screens. I don't even know where to look for the screen.
Steve's looking at weather patterns in Brunei.
This is lots of screens.
Former Cy Young Award winner.
On the mound, it is Steve Stone. He's working a little faster. He's got the curveball, throwing it more for strikes.
When you say he's changed his style, originally he was a fastballer.
He was a hard thrower.
He had learned how to pitch.
Breaking down the game of baseball for more than 3.5 decades.
The great thing about this game is the understanding can be rudimentary, whether you're a first-timer, whether you've seen most every game every year for a long time. It doesn't really matter. There's something in this game for everyone.
On Twitter, at Steve Stone.
If you're listening to this on Mitch Rosen, 670 The Score, and all of the wondrous folks who have come through those halls, if you have a friend who has a Twitter account, call that friend and ask them for just $1.99 a month. If they'll follow Steve Stone, you can make one Steve Stone terribly happy with one follower or two followers.
Steve Stone with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score. The Score.
Of course, we're following Steve Stone on Twitter, at Steve Stone. He is with us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Boy, Steve, I've got a personal sort of text group chat with a bunch of my childhood friends who are dyed-in-the-wool Sox fans, and I couldn't believe just some of the angst, some of the despair from really otherwise intelligent, educated, reasonable people. But in this season, it's hard to tell people not to panic when there's only 60 games.
Well, I understand that things haven't gone particularly well in just about every aspect of the game. I mean, Luis Robert has been a revelation. Looks like he's going to be a star for a long time. But the ball club is just not playing very well. And you look at the doubleheader yesterday as a microcosm of the early season struggles, and you see a couple of different things, Dan, that jump out at you. Number one, there was 2 walks in 18 innings, 2 walks taken by the Sox. They're striking out at an alarming rate. I think only Cincinnati has struck out more in the history of the game through 4 or 5 games. So if you're not making contact and if you're not walking, this team is hitting home runs. But the problem is they're solo shots. And when you hit solo home runs and the other team is hitting 2- and 3-run homers, it's not going to work out particularly well. Plus, as we know, the starting pitching has not been consistent. The control hasn't been there for the starters. So one time through the rotation didn't look impressive, but Lucas Giolito comes out tonight trying to get it back to where he was last year. And everyone associated with the Sox would have loved for this season to start out a whole lot better than it has. However, you go out there every day and try to do the best you can do. You hope that Nomar Mazara comes back. The big one is Eloy Jimenez. You hope that he gets back here in the not-too-distant future because he means so much to this lineup. But when things aren't going very well, there's not much that you can do except go out there the next day and try to do a little bit better than you did the day before. But there are teams that have started out very hot that won't be hot in the not-too-distant future. So we have to hope that the Sox are one of those teams that is starting slowly, but picks it up and gets better, especially when this lineup is all put together.
Giolito said he made reference to something, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said that he wasn't coming down the mound in the right way. His vertical plane, that was keeping him from putting his fastball where he wanted it or decreasing his effectiveness. What does he mean when he's talking about that? When he's talking about getting off the mound and downward?
Well, I have a pretty good idea that everything got flat for him. And usually when that happens, whether it's your breaking ball, and Lucas doesn't throw a whole lot of those, but he didn't have command of the straight change, and not having that early really hurt him. But it was fastball command that really saw to it that wasn't a good outing. What you try to do, Dan, is you try to shorten up your stride. And by shortening your stride, it allows you to stay on top of the baseball and throw with a downward plane. I think that's what he did last year. And so you shorten it up while you're working either in the bullpen or maybe between innings, you try to shorten the stride. And then when you get a feel for it, that's when you go back to your natural or normal stride. I think that was the case where he's talking about not getting on top of anything, not allowing him to throw straight downhill. I think that's when he's at his best. You know, he's a big guy. He's 6'5". And so going straight over the top with a shorter arm swing, you get a little more movement on the ball. You get a little more precision. You're able to throw it where you wanted to. He just didn't have it last time, and that kind of set the tone for the whole game. But the Sox have had a big problem in the first inning. I mean, that's not a secret to anybody. They can't get out of the first inning, and when they do, in the Keiko game, they won the ball game. That was the only game the Sox have won. So first inning has been a problem.
Ricky Renteria has been taking a lot of heat for his lineups, and I never generally, most seasons, I say, look, I don't worry about lineups because over the course of 162, they really don't matter. It all comes out in the wash. But now it's magnified, and, you know, Ozzie Guillen was going off last night. We played the sound of him last night saying, what is Nicky Delmonico doing batting fourth? Why isn't Luis Robert higher in this lineup? Does it matter, and is this something that needs to change?
Well, for better or worse, Ricky has said that he wants to keep the pressure off Robert as long as he possibly can. But in watching Luis in the early stages, it seems to me that he's impervious to pressure. He has so much confidence that he can get the job done against anybody. I don't think he's feeling any more pressure wherever he hits in the lineup. To me, watching him make adjustments pitch to pitch, and it was clearly illustrated on a second slider in an at-bat that he got a base hit to right field, he made the adjustment from the first slider to the second slider. Young hitters normally don't do that, but he is an extraordinary young hitter. If that's the case, look, if you retard the development of Robert just a bit by putting him higher in the lineup, that's just a gamble you have to take in a 60-game season, to be honest with you. For me, Nicky hitting fourth is not the best use of Nicky's talents. Again, that's for me. I don't make out the lineup. Ricky does. And so we'll have to see, you know, we'll have to see where Nicky shows up in the lineup. That's been the continuing saga. Where's Nicky going to hit, kind of thing? When Aloy comes back, it's pretty simple. Nicky's not going to hit all that often. But he was swinging the bat real well when we started spring training originally. He was swinging it pretty well when we came back for the summer aspect of spring training. He is not swinging it well now, although he did get a base hit and a run batted in, which got Sox a little closer in the nightcap. That being said, is he your prototypical four-hitter? No. Ricky was looking for some balance in the lineup against a couple of right-handed pitchers who had excellent control. And, you know, that's his feeling. He's a manager. He manages by a gut feeling. Sometimes the gut is right, sometimes it isn't. But when a team is not doing well, and you stated it, when a team is not doing well, everything is magnified. Every move you make, if it doesn't work out, is the worst move ever made. Every move you do well isn't really addressed because you lost the ballgame. So managers are usually in a no-win situation. They don't get enough credit when the team wins. They take too much blame when the team loses. And, you know, you're facing the two best teams in the division by far. Most everybody picked Cleveland second behind Minnesota, who was a unanimous choice to win the division. So these are two good teams right off the bat. Cleveland has some of the best pitching in all of baseball, and they showed it yesterday. I mean, we were facing their 4-5, and they look just wonderful. You know, they don't make mistakes. They are not wild in the strike zone too often, and that's why Cleveland is Cleveland. They also have just a wonderful manager. Terry Francona, with 15 straight seasons above 500, has shown if he's not the best manager in the game, he's probably in the top two. So you're facing a guy that doesn't make any mistakes in the other dugout, and you're facing a team that doesn't give up any runs. But the team, I think the Indians, they don't have a lot of thunder offensively, but they have enough to support their pitching and their defense.
Robert has given us a wow moment, a game, if you're watching carefully. And sometimes it's in the details. Sometimes you just don't realize. Like I knew he was fast, but when he beat out that double play, when he was able to get to first, then I thought, well, they might look at that. Maybe he's out. And no, he was clearly safe. And we sort of get a sense when you watch a double play ball that you see the camera shot, the flip to second. And then when they cut to the other camera, you have an idea of where in your mind you think the runner is going to be. And then I went, oh my God, he's already there. Like that was remarkable to me. He's legit, like fast.
Well, in the minor leagues, they were comparing him with Billy Hamilton as far as speed is concerned. And the difference is Billy Hamilton is, for all intents and purposes, a flea. And Luis Robert is a very large man. I mean, you're talking about a guy 6'4", right in the neighborhood of 215, maybe 220. He has enormous speed. And on double plays, it's really interesting. On double plays, you'll see a lot of guys, when they hit the ball in the infield, they know it's got a good chance to be two. That first step is slow because it's an oh, woe is me step, and then they get thrown out of first base. Luis Robert is not that guy. He beats it out of the box, and I think everybody would be stunned in a match race with just about anybody in baseball. Luis Robert would certainly be in the picture. And one of the things that I'd like to clarify to people who are watching the broadcast, these are away games. So understand something. We don't have control of all of the cameras. So certain things that our fans get used to when we're talking about it and they follow along with us, our people in the truck are outstanding, as our camera crew. They're wonderful, and they will follow right along with us when we're addressing a certain subject. You can see a play. You get a different angle of it. We don't really get that when we're on the road. We actually have one camera that's ours, and the rest is called the World Feed. We're at the mercy of whatever they're doing in Cleveland. So if you don't see something you'd like to see, it's not the fault of our broadcast. It's the way baseball is going to be in 2020. That's what happens when we're doing a game in Chicago and the game is being played in Cleveland.
Have you ever seen a center fielder casually lope over into right field, seemingly gliding over to a routine fly ball directly at the positioned right fielder, and the center fielder stands in front of him and makes the catch? Do they need a right fielder?
Well, most times, probably not. I mean, Luis Robert believes that any ball that goes to the outfield is his until it's proven that maybe the outfielder is running away from him to catch the ball. But, yeah, he wants to take everything, and that's a pretty good thing to do. I think eventually he's going to probably give way to some of the right fielders. But in the case of Leary, that might be a good plan.
I've never seen that before, and I had to rewind it to realize that did he just do what I think he did, and indeed he did.
Yeah, he's much taller than Leary, so he figured let the big man with the sure hands make the catch, and he made the catch. Yeah, you don't see it very often. As far as gliding to the ball, I think for our listeners who remember Devon White used to glide to the baseball mm-hmm. pretty much the same way, but I don't think Devon White was as fast as Luis Robert.
That's why when I talk with that run to first, that's the Bo Jackson comp. That's the only guy who jumps to mind with a baseball size speed ratio. Like we're not talking about, you know, your partner Jason Benetti compared him to Terrell Owens, the wide receiver, and that's what we're talking about here. That looks like football movement to me, not baseball movement.
Well, he's got that kind of size. I mean, you're talking about size wise, puts on a couple of pounds, and he'd probably make a wonderful tight end who could outrun just about all of the defensive backs. So yeah, he's a really big guy, but it's very exciting the skill package he brings to the ballpark every day and his desire to this point. And the only thing that can stop him is the one thing that can stop Eloy, and that is the physical aspect of the game, the injuries, the little nagging injuries that Luis Robert had early but has overcome at this point. Eloy continues to get dinged up every now and then. I think he has to realize that Wall wins 100% of the time. Player stands, the stands win. I mean, last year there was a play where the only thing that kept Eloy probably from having a fractured skull was the net. It actually catapulted him back on the field. We just don't need him diving into the stands and not knowing where the fence is. There is a warning track for a reason. And so when the dirt shows up and the grass disappears, you have to know that you have 2 to 2.5 steps before you hit the wall. You just have to know that. And he's too important to this team to keep running into the left field wall. And hopefully he's got that behind him. He's learning something every day. He's still a very young player. So in learning something every day, this is one of the things that the Sox need him to learn. Don't crash into the wall. You won't come out very well.
Or maybe he's just a designated hitter. I hate to say it, but at some point, he can't take himself out of action by getting hurt playing defense. You know, sometimes there could be a collision on the bases. You could get hit by a pitch, or you could twist an ankle while running at top speed. But if he keeps getting hurt playing defense, you might just have to get him out of there.
Well, the one problem is, if that's the case, and nobody really knows if that's going to be the case, the Sox have a vested interest in him playing the field. The reason being that if it's the case that he is a DH, then you have to reconfigure the way you're going to do business as a club.
Yep.
Then you can't go out and get Edwin Encarnacion. And then you can't play both Grandal and McCann in the same lineup. In the early going, the team has been better with McCann behind the plate. Grandal's off to a slow start, but you figure with the kind of year he had last year, he's going to pick it up. Right now, picking up from last year, McCann is a better player at this point. He can't hit left-handed. Grandal is a switch hitter, gives you a lot more flexibility. But if Eloy is destined as a DH, you've got too many DHs on this team. And again, for Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, they have to reconfigure how they're going to approach assembling a roster. Right now, again, they do have the vested interest in Eloy playing out there every day. He has made some strides. And the one thing that he has to do is learn the warning track on the wall.
Is Mazzara coming back?
I do believe eventually, yes. Hopefully sooner rather than later, because he does give this lineup balance. And if he's swinging it real well, as we've seen at times he can do, because he's enormously strong. I mean, you don't hit the ball 500 feet if you're not really strong. He did that against our ball club in Texas. And I think at his age, he's got a lot of room yet to grow. I think his best years are ahead of him. Hopefully he can get healthy and get the swing back and then come through it, because he becomes a big part of this lineup, especially when you look at what they're going to have to do in his absence.
You said something really interesting yesterday, because it's very easy to forget that on the road that you're not there. But you're still sitting in a broadcast booth and playing the monitor as you would during a game. And very often, if people don't realize that baseball broadcasters will make a transition just habitually to get the location of the pitch, see the contact, and then move your eyes to the field of play and move off the monitor to live action. And you were still doing that, but there were no players out there. There's a ball hit to right field, and you look at right field, and no one's standing there. That had to be really alien.
Well, yeah, you know, the first part of some games that happens a little bit more than you would like it to happen. However, realizing there's no players there, you don't have to look at the field. But what I really like to do is I like to judge routes. I like to see who's taken a good route to the ball. I like to see how they're shifting pitch to pitch, because when I watch the fielders shift pitch to pitch, I know what pitch is coming and I know where it's coming, because otherwise they wouldn't be shifting there. And when you can see the whole field and when you can see the game played, you can pretty much tell a little bit how things are going to happen, where they're going to happen, what's coming next, and how everybody's going to respond to it. But because you're limited when the team is on the road, you don't have the cameras to follow these people, and I can't use my eyes to see what's going on, you can't make the kind of broadcast that you want to make. I mean, you know, I think Jason and I both want to do the perfect broadcast. We know we can't, but we want to bring that person at home every aspect of what's going on in the field. Let them know that this is an infinitely complex game. It's a great, when it's done perfectly, Dan, it is a wonderfully choreographed ballet. 9 people moving as one, 9 people getting ready for what is going to happen. They move sequentially, then you can pretty much see how it plays out. That's the beauty of baseball. That's what you get when you're actually at the game that you can't get when you're not. I mean, obviously, we all make our living in the media. The electronic media is nice. watching a baseball game is television is terrific. Certainly when the game ends, you don't have that long drive home. But it's a lot better to be at the park and see how it unfolds.
Before we let you go, did you get a chance to see what went down between the Astros and the Dodgers last night with Joe Kelly and Dusty screaming from the dugout and this sort of they started to do the bench clearing brawl thing and then stopped and just sort of looked at each other? It was a little slice of 2020 life.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen with teams is where you'd normally have one of those bench clearing brawls that don't make a lot of sense and the guys in the periphery get hurt. I think you're going to see teams come out and then decide, you know what, if I get suspended, this is going to be devastating for my ball club. You really can't afford to get suspended at all this year. It's going to be tough enough to deal with the positive tests and tough enough to deal with the injuries, but you can't afford a suspension. So, what I saw was nobody get hit. And, you know, the jawing back and forth between two teams is magnified now because you can hear literally everything that comes out of that dugout. During the course of a game, when they're fans, especially a lot of fans at the ballpark, you don't know 10% of what comes out of that dugout. You can hear the occasional guy or the occasional coach, but you can't hear it very well. Now you can hear it perfectly, and that's going to lead to some people getting a little testy during the course of the game. But they have to bear in mind that if you do allow your temper to take over, you're hurting the baseball team. And with the way this season is playing out, nobody can afford to lose anybody because I felt there'd be a lot of pitching injuries, and there's going to be a lot more pitching injuries than we've seen, and we've seen some devastating injuries early. We're also going to see injuries to players. Even though you have 60 guys available to you, and right now a 30-man roster and a 40-man, you've got a 40-man roster also, even though you have that, it's still going to be difficult. Depth is still going to be a problem. You're still going to have the situation like the Miami Ball Club. If that happens again, things are not going to go well for baseball, and they're going to do everything they can to prevent that.
Yeah, Marlins can't field a team. I mean, if they want to say, you know, when are you going to play? They've scheduled some games coming up after a couple days, but they've got to figure out if they can have a viable roster at all. I don't know.
Well, they're going to be able to field a team. The problem is going to be that there's going to be some 19 and 20-year-olds who are not even close to ready to play Major League Baseball, and that's going to be the situation. And look, the Marlins weren't going to get there anyway. So let's say the same thing happens to the Dodgers or Yankees. That is going to be disastrous for the game because those teams are supposed to get there. And if they have trouble finding guys to go out there, then it'll be a problem. That's why, you know, the people in Cincinnati are complaining because of the testing and they can't get Moustakas and Senzel back on the field. They have to pass a review board kind of thing. But they have to realize that this extraordinary season is still a season, and baseball still wants to play, and that's why they're being super careful with everything. And so if it's an inconvenience of being away in the lineup for a couple of days, and believe me, that lineup isn't the same without those two guys, and we saw it against the Cubs. I mean, the Cubs went in, and Cincinnati had been a trouble spot for them, but the Cubs are hitting the ball well. They're certainly throwing it well. But it helps to face a Cincinnati club without two of their major offensive cogs. But that's for safety. And the players just have to deal with that.
Steve Stone, thanks as always. Continued good health. We'll talk next week.
You too, Dan. Take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.